What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John and I here on Wednesday night, Thursday morning, I guess a couple days before the Forbidden Door pay-per-view. So we're going to cover that. We'll talk about what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit of WWE in the first segment. Then we'll do the whole Dynamite review. And then at the end, we'll do a little bit of a preview of Forbidden Door based on the 14 matches on the card. There's so many matches. I just want to make sure. I'm looking at Wikipedia, seeing if they've updated it. Where is the Wikipedia here? I just want to make sure. Someone said 14.
Wow. Well, that's with all the buy-in stuff.
So that's the other thing is I don't know what's on the pre-show and what's not on the pre-show.
I think on the buy-in for sure is that 8-man tag with the Young Lions of New Japan versus the Gun Club and Max Caster, yeah. Right?
It's not 14. It is only 10.
So, and that's with the buy-in match.
That's with the buy-in match. Okay, so I don't know why I thought it was 14. I think it was because I thought there were 10 already, and then I know they added 4 to the show today. So yeah, only 10. Not that
the wife
bad.
The wife was asking me today, like, oh, how long is that show going to be? And I'm like, three or 4 hours, 5 hours maybe. I just mumbled something.
So Dave said he believes under 4. He said that on Twitter today.
I hope so. Yeah, that'd be nice.
I mean, especially after the negativity that they got from the last show, you would think that they would try and make it a little less. And I hope so as well, because one, I'm not there, so selfishly, I hope so. But yeah, like it's also because it's hot in San Jose right now. It's like 100 degrees.
And big Dave's house, you just never know what's going to happen when we're there. So
all right, so we'll go over this card at the end of the show, and we'll talk about some WWE right now. So I didn't even ask you about this, and I was actually talking to Brian Alvarez yesterday of this very website. He joined Andrew Zarian and I on our one-year anniversary show of We're Live, Pal. Denise Salcedo also joined. Up on the website, if you are a subscriber to the We're Live, Pal feed, shows up there as well. Really fun show. But anyways, I was kind of asking because he does one show every day. Mm-hmm. And on some of those days, he does multiple shows. And I think on certain days, he might even do 3 shows in a day. And I was just like, how do you format the show so that you just don't talk about the same thing all the time and copy your takes? And, you know, and because that was kind of a thing for me is because I on Friday night talked about the SmackDown thing with Big Dave, then came back on We're Live, Pal, talked about it then, and now we're going to talk a little bit about it here. Now, if people listen to We're Live, Pal, or the show with Big Dave, they sort of probably know my take already. I'm mostly asking you because you and I haven't talked about this, but it's just, you know, when you do more than one show, it's kind of hard to make sure that you don't repeat what you've constantly said already. But I'm just going to sort of rehash what happened on Friday and get your thoughts on it because WWE is going back to the well. And I don't know, if Gorilla Monsoon were still the announcer, would he say that they went to the well one too many times here for SummerSlam? So, as we know, Cody Rhodes was going to have a big part of Money in the Bank and SummerSlam. He's coming back and he's a top guy. Tears his pec, he's going to be out for a while. Randy Orton was going to be the guy at SummerSlam to face Roman Reigns. And it sounds like he's got some back injuries and he's going to be out for a little while. Matt Riddle was supposed to face Roman Reigns at Money in the Bank. And it turns out that match wasn't going to happen. And instead, they were going to do it on SmackDown. So this was last Friday. We talked about the Vince McMahon stuff on our last show. And all of a sudden, Vince is on SmackDown. And I was like, this guy, he's in the Wall Street Journal covered by a ton of people, and his way to kind of get ahead of that is to show up on SmackDown, smile, say, you know, his little shtick, his little catchphrase, now, together, forever, whatever that he says, and then he just leaves. And I was like, wow, what was that for? And so, as it turns out, there was a lot of people like me who never watched SmackDown Live and decided, well, because Vince is on, I kind of want to see what's going to happen. We were there, and then they built to this main event with Matt Riddle and Roman Reigns. That match was it was promoted fairly well, I thought, throughout the show. Matt Riddle comes out, does the babyface promo of, I got to win it for Randy. And so if I didn't know any better, and if I was like just a casual fan who kind of checks in and checks out with wrestling, I would have thought, oh my God, Matt Riddle's going to win the championship on SmackDown. What babyface is going to promise to win to his best friend and then lose the championship? So it was brilliant because you had people come to see Vince, and maybe some of those folks stuck around. You had Matt Riddle promise to win the championship, so people possibly thought they were going to get a title change, so they stick around through the main event. And, of course, Matt Riddle did not win. But what they really wanted the eyeballs on was the end of the match with Brock Lesnar in a cowboy hat coming out to beat up Roman Reigns. And literally the television show goes off and they have a graphic. You know how you always make fun of the Tony Khan thing, mm-hmm. where something happens in the ring and then boom, graphic is already ready. The graphic was on Twitter the second this show came off. Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, last man standing, oh, SummerSlam. A show that has not been promoted one time yet. This is literally the first time I've seen anything about an actual card.
Yeah.
So my question to you, for one, I just want to make sure that I give credit, because even though putting Vince on TV was super sleazy, it was super manipulative, what they did to keep that viewer watching, I thought was really brilliant. It shows you that they still know all the tricks, and when they put their mind to it, they have, you know, those little tricks that always work, because this was like the highest rated SmackDown in a long time. And, you know, doing, you know, unfortunately for Riddle, they kind of used him and abused him in this segment, because then he loses to Omos on Monday and he's not even in the Money in the Bank. So it's kind of like, thanks, Matt, for doing a good job, but, you know, we're done with you here. And then, you know, the Brock thing at the end, which is what they wanted the eyeballs on. So what do you think about just having to go back to this match? And it's not like they haven't had opportune time to build somebody else up, though I will give them a little bit of a fallback in that they didn't know they were losing Cody. They didn't know they were losing Randy. But some of it is like, well, injuries happen in wrestling. Like, you got to have a plan B. Like, what's your plan B? But going back to this match, we saw it at WrestleMania. Roman won it pretty convincingly. I didn't sense that we necessarily needed a rematch 6 months later. But because of everything that happened, they had to go back to this match, and it's Brock and Roman at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, that's their fault for not having anyone ready to kind of step in when, if need be, if someone goes down with an injury or multiple guys go down with an injury. It's a stadium show, right? So who's going to help fill that stadium? There's really no one. So they go with the guy that they had success with in Brock Lesnar. But like you said, they're going to the well one too many times here. Last man standing stipulation does nothing, in my opinion, for the match.
And there's no reason for it, because
no
Roman won clean already.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, you know, this is all the issues that WWE is having that just comes to a head here, you know, when you have got to go back to this match. And I like Brock Lesnar a lot, but I really don't want to see him in this position right now. You know, it's unfortunate they did Riddle, and I didn't even know the result about Raw, he just told me right now. I can't believe he didn't even make it into Money in the Bank. He could at least won that thing, you know, kind
of
like
I mean, maybe he shoehorns his way in somehow, but as of this week, he was not in the match.
Yeah, so I hope so, because it'd be nice to see him get that, you know, just for doing that, what he did and everything. And yeah, so that's my thoughts on it. I have zero interest in WWE right now. Like zero. Like I didn't even really care to watch Money in the Bank. I didn't even really care to watch SummerSlam. And the only reason I would probably watch it is just to hang out with you guys. Just BS. You know, that's it really. That's just like to get my time with my friends, you know. But other than that, like I'm not invested in anything they're doing, not on any brand that they have. And Vince coming out, you know, exactly what you said. It was a ratings ploy. It was Vince just kind of being like, I'm not going anywhere, you know. you know, this doesn't bother me at all, and it maybe it should, you know, but he's you know, it's maybe it's something for the investors, I guess. I don't know, but it was just, and I guess it bled over to Raw's rating was pretty strong from
Raw's rating was excellent as well. I think some of it was just you know, the thing that happened with Brock and Roman. Vince obviously just created so much media attention, and he even showed up on Raw because he just wanted to promote that John Cena was going to be back for his 20th anniversary. Can you imagine John Cena? 20-year anniversary of John Cena. We saw this guy in the very beginning, and it's 20 years. That's crazy.
I saw him in the very beginning of APW when he came in for the APW versus UPW angle that they did. So,
okay, I haven't heard this story. Was he what gimmick prototype. Was he?
Prototype.
Okay.
It was him, Kazarian, Sakota was one of them. Who else was it? I'm trying to remember. Was it Daniels involved in that? I know Prototype for sure. He was, I remember, and he cut a good promo. I remember him cutting really good promos then too. Like he had this that deep voice and everything. And of course he had that great look, you know, so he really stood out. And I remember Kazarian had long hair. He looked like a future star and all that stuff. But it was like a summertime deal, I believe it was. I'm trying to remember when it took place exactly, but it was fun. And then got some attention on APW. It was natural. They're down south, you know, just have a little deal. It was all took place in that Vallejo facility. So I remember John Cena, just seeing him at APW, and you know, now next you know he's like one of the biggest stars in wrestling history. So
did you guys do the home and home, and then there was a UPW hosted show?
It wasn't some APW guys went down, like Michael Modest, Tony Jones went to UPW. Mostly it just took place like in Vallejo for APW. At the time they're running at that facility over there. They had King of the Indies there, the second one. And that was basically our home turf at the time. Cause I think they couldn't do Gym Wars anymore. One, it's too small for that kind of angle. And two, it's like, I don't think they could, there's an issue with the selling tickets for an event that wasn't zoned for entertainment at the time. That's why later on the shows became like quote unquote student shows. We didn't know, no admission, but if you brought like three cans of food for the homeless, you know, we had a Toys for Tots thing, basically bin that they would, we gave a lot of, you know, helped feed a lot of the homeless man with a lot of stuff. We did help out. So it was kind of, it was a good deal all in all.
So when you see Cena, you obviously notice the look. I never saw the Prototype gimmick, so I don't know what to think. You know, I just saw him basically the second he was on WWE TV. Did you sense that he was going to be something?
I think he's going to be the biggest, one of the biggest stars in WWE history, but I thought for sure he'd be signed, no problem at all. Yeah, that to me, Prototype just seemed like an upgraded version of Lex Luger, the total package, right? That's kind of how I pictured him, but he could talk and he looked good. He was really green, but back then I didn't understand, you know, all that just yet. You know, I was still kind of just volunteering and and keep my mouth shut and listening, and then and so it took me, you know, later on I would learn all that stuff, but you know, so I just thought he looked great and talked good, and you know, he had you know, for his that time, I thought there were good matches.
So he didn't come across to you as like super super duper green at that point?
I'm sure they all were, but I wasn't noticing that. I just noticed it was just like a fun angle, and I was kind of like into it at that, you know. And then I just knew he was gonna go to the WWE, you know, because the UPW's connection with WWE was like, it was like a developmental from the West Coast side, I guess, at the time. And I just didn't know he was going to be, I couldn't predict that he was going to be, you know, as big as he was. I just predicted he'd at least be signed. There's no doubt about it. They were going to sign this guy because his look.
Yeah.
And the way he talked.
All right, let's talk about Dynamite. We'll go through the whole show here. This was a wild show. There were so many things happening on this show. Mm-hmm. Some stuff very important, and some stuff surprisingly not important at all. And I would say there were certain points in this show that I was super duper frustrated. There were certain points in this show where I was like, okay, this is kind of what go-home shows are like. You're just pressing hard to get people interested. And so a lot of times there's not like a lot of time, you know, a lot of time to breathe on shows like this, but that's kind of Dynamite usually. And then the main event segment had me scratching my head a little bit, especially how it ended, because they had... For the first time ever, they had extra time. Like, they didn't run out of time getting off the air here, and time stood still. And it was like, okay, I was like, Mox and Tanahashi are just standing and waiting. I almost felt like, it was like in a basketball game, or let's say a UFC fight, and somebody is clearly going to win a decision, but the other person is like starting to fight very well in the last round. And so the person who's winning is just constantly looking at the clock going like, oh my gosh, there's still a minute left. And then, you know, kind of runs, checks the clock. Oh, still 45 seconds left. If there was a clock there, Mox was checking the clock to see when are we going, when are we out of here? Because I'm just standing up and eyeballing Tanahashi. I can only talk so much, pretend crap about this guy until it gets awkward. So, all in all, I was not a big fan of this show, but I will say there's some weird, I have a weird sort of perverse curiosity about how this thing comes off on Sunday. Now, I do think the for a wrestling show, there's too many really good wrestlers on this show for the wrestling to be bad. But there's so many guys in all of these different matches. Mm. They don't seem to mesh very well. And I kind of wonder about, you know, this mix of New Japan and this mix of AEW and who's kind of calling the shots and how these matches are going to go. And there's just this weird curiosity I have just to see how this show, which is, you know, there's not a lot of cohesion to it, how it lays out. And by the end of Sunday, sort of what the, I guess, internet reaction is going to be. Because so far, you know, even hardcore Dynamite fans have been frustrated with this build. And there are also folks who are just like, nope. Not going to let anybody bring me down about this match, about this show. This is the show that I've been waiting for since AEW was created, right? That's kind of how I feel as well. It's like, man, when AEW was created, this is the show I envisioned. Now, I envisioned a little bit of a different show, but, you know, the idea of New Japan and AEW working together. So, yeah, so let's talk about Dynamite. You can give me your thoughts. I'm sure you have many of them in, and some of the same segments that I have, like lot of stuff to talk about. So I was frustrated before this show even started, though, because I, like I said, Brian Alvarez was on We're Live Pal yesterday, and he kind of told us on that show, and I think he even talked about it on Wrestling Observer Live, that people were telling him that Danielson is not going to be at the pay-per-view. And so they decided to use Danielson to announce basically what was going on. So they turned his injury into a, you know, to try and pop a TV rating, I guess. And this is the second time they've done this. They did it with CM Punk. In that scenario, I was a little bit more forgiving because that it had just happened. Like, they needed him to kind of announce what was going on, and he didn't do a good job of it because we were all confused after it was over. But I can forgive them for that because it's sort of like, you know, it had just happened a couple of days before and they had this hot show for the LA market. And so I get that. This one, I'm less forgiving because Bryan Danielson is maybe the single guy I wanted to see most on this show from the AEW side. Moxley's right there, you know, obviously from New Japan, it's Okada and Tanahashi. But to use this time to kind of, you know, pop a rating and even tease a surprise, I was like, ugh. Like, it, you know, it's something to me that I don't like about wrestling that WWE wouldn't really care about, which is, you know, using this time to exploit something. And I just felt a little, you know, I thought it was a little sleazy. I thought it was a little dirty. And I was not happy with them using this time. And then they go and try and tease who the secret person is going to be. But so he comes out. He says he's not cleared to compete at Forbidden Door or Blood and Guts. And then he says he feels good. And he talks about how his mind is sharp. I think he's trying to say he doesn't have a concussion, because I think that's what everyone is worried about, is concussion and neck, right? Like, that's all the Bryan Danielson fans are like, we were, oh my God, if he's hurt, what is it? And that's also probably part of my frustration, is that they're not honest about some of these injuries. And then he says his replacement, he's got a replacement. And I guess this person also is joining the BCC. Excalibur explained that later in the show. His replacement is going to face Zack Sabre Jr. instead of him, and then is also going to take his place in Blood and Guts. He said he came out the heel entrance, and he's going to be a heel. He's not going to tell us what's going on here. And so Zack Sabre Jr. comes out, and I don't know if, I mean, you know this, but I don't know if everybody knows this. Zack Sabre Jr. is a really good promo. Yeah. And he could have done something here, even if it was for 2 minutes, to really get the fans riled up about the fact that Bryan Danielson was not going to be in this match. Now, that would have added to kind of the sleaziness of it, but oh well, they were already there. Instead, he does nothing. He just comes out and they go immediately to a Jon Moxley interview backstage. So Zach comes, smiles, moving on.
Yeah.
And I thought that was not good.
Yeah, everything you said here, I don't understand why they're keeping a surprise for the replacement opponent, a placement for Bryan Danielson for the pay-per-view. I think Tony Khan, speaking of going to the well one too many times, is the surprise, right? Yeah. Like, he's always, I don't think, unless, because who could it be? Now, there's two people I've seen, and they're both really good wrestlers, but are they like, we needed to wait to the pay-per-view to be shocked to see them show up?
Mm-hmm.
One, Cesaro, mm-hmm. right? Which I think, if you're going to try to sell some buys now, why don't you have him come out and confront or be out, you know, or be announced for the match and mm-hmm. show them, let the fans, the audience at home view, the fans go nuts for them and for him coming out. And then and someone also said Jonathan Gresham would be the other guy, which technically would be a hell of a fantastic match, but it is Jonathan Gresham is not a big star, right?
Yeah.
So that would be a disappointment as a surprise. So we'll see what it's going to be. Like, now it all depends how long Bryan Danielson is going to be out. And considering that Zack Sabre Jr. did not come out and do a promo on Bryan, it might be longer than we think.
From what I understand, it might be longer than what we think.
Yeah, because you could use this time to set up some future business with Zack Sabre Jr. and Bryan Danielson. A make good, right? Because this match couldn't come off.
Yeah.
And Zack could have, you know, but, and so you still could have done something with Zack, because he just comes out, you know, just looking like a model, you know, that's all, like, just comes out. Good-looking guy.
Who's this handsome, who's skinny guy?
Yeah, who's this guy? Who's this guy that, you know, that's on the cover of Gap? I don't know. I don't know what that was. But, you know, he just comes out and just, like, starts jabbing and jawing, and the music's playing over him. And it just doesn't. He could have came out and said, let's be honest, Bryan. Let's be honest. you just don't want to be in the ring. You know, it's not an injury. It's not this. It's your anxiety. It's your fear. You know what I mean? Like, of facing me.
Yeah, I'm a better technical wrestler than you are now. Let's face it.
Yeah. I'm far surpassed you. You're still very good. You're still very good, but I'm just, you know, 5 steps ahead of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you want to break my trachea? Come on. I'd break your arm, your leg, your ankle, and even that put together surgically neck. Easy to break that, you know?
They used to call it a stack of dimes back in the day.
You know, like something like that. Like just, and then maybe Danielson says, hey, you know what? The guy you're going to face is actually here. Here comes whoever.
Yeah.
Hopefully it was Cesaro, because I think if Gresham came out, people were like, okay. You know?
Well, yeah, Gresham, I don't think he fits in the Blood and Guts match that well. People have also said Johnny Gargano, but I don't think Johnny Gargano fits in the Blood and Guts match very well either. I think Cesaro's perfect. I actually hope it's him, because I think he is surprise enough. He is somebody who hardcore wrestling fans really enjoy, and I mean, let's face it, he's an ex-WWE guy, and like that's kind of, you know, who they've utilized to kind of get the, you know, get the pop and get the blogs writing and get the tweets going. So it sort of fits the playbook. I mean, but there are others that people have talked about that I think would be a little bit of a disappointment, only because, not because of how good or not good they are. Like, I know our Brace for Impact brothers were talking about, you know, Alexander, and he would be awesome in the technical match, but he would not be the most fantastic person in front of that live crowd to go like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. X, you know.
I'm glad I paid $50 to see this guy. Be a surprise. No, they would never do that.
Yeah. So I mean, I do hope it's Cesaro, like you said. So
me too. Plus, I think that'd be a great match.
Yeah,
Cesaro. I always like Cesaro. So.
So Moxley's interview basically says that he's about to have the biggest match of his career against maybe the greatest wrestler who's ever lived. And tonight, the tag team match is about business, because the main event is Mox and Tanahashi on the same team. Sunday, it is personal, because they're going to be in the main event of Forbidden Door. All right,
Simple promo.
We have our first match, Orange Cassidy, Rocky, Trent, against Will Ospreay and Aussie Open. JR is trying to sell Will Ospreay on this TV audience so hard.
Yeah.
And I commend him for it, because to me, this is this whole thing should be about how good Will Ospreay is, possibly comes back to AEW and becomes, you know, one of their, you know, works some matches and becomes a ticket seller for them.
Mm-hmm.
And for the second time since he's been in AEW, he is on the losing side of the match.
Yeah.
Now, this match was, there were a couple matches, this match and another match.
They lost that 6-man tag on Rampage, right?
Yeah.
Trent got the win.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stupid.
So this is one of two matches where I was like, you know, if I was going to an indie show and this was the match that I got from the indie show, I would be super happy, because they're doing stuff and they're flying around.
Mm-hmm.
But on the TV show, where you're sort of building to something, I didn't really like this that much. Too much Orange Cassidy shtick for my for what I like in wrestling. I don't think the Aussie Open guys are necessarily featured enough for us to really care about them. And, you know, I think they've missed the boat on Ospreay now twice, because he is so spectacular. And really, the long, long, long view of this should be to be building Will Ospreay up so high, so that people are begging for a match with Kenny Omega.
Mm-hmm.
But for the second time, his team loses, and, you know, they lose to the Orange's Superman punch, and the Aussie Open guys take the fall. Jeff Cobb and Okan come out. Jeff is going to have a match on Rampage, which was taped. Was it taped tonight, or are they doing a live Rampage on Friday?
It's taped tonight.
Taped tonight against Is it against Cash Wheeler? And then FTR comes out, and Dax was wearing a Loverboy Dennis Condrey shirt.
Yeah,
if you saw that. Yeah,
yeah, I liked it. Yeah, that's cool.
All right, so what were your thoughts on this match, this whole angle? These are four. I guess both belts are on the line, the ROH titles and the IWGP titles.
Really?
I think. At least that's what the marquee said.
Oh, it did? I thought it said for the IWGP.
Well, maybe I got that wrong.
And again, I don't know. Excalibur was doing the Micro Machine deal. And I,
yeah.
Yeah.
He actually made a mistake for the first time ever.
Yeah, Shivani's like, hey, let's do that again. That was pretty funny. Finally, Shivani said something that made me laugh. But
then he said something that made me sad, where he's like, Tanahashi and Jericho, first time ever in the ring.
Yeah, he was trying to cover it. And you can just probably see Tony's like, no, they wrestled in Japan. They wrestled in Japan. They wrestled in Japan. They wrestled in Japan. I can just picture that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is for both titles, as far as I can tell.
God, that means FTR is winning it. And I hope so, that they're winning it and they beat Trent or Rocky. I hope they don't beat Cobb or Ocon. Oh, they could beat Ocon, but I don't think they're going to beat Cobb. But this match just wasn't good. Jim Ross is awesome in this match, though. I mean, awesome, like in grumpy JR fashion. Like, Orange Cassidy tags Rocky in, then Rocky he tags Trent in right away. So without making any contact to opponent, that's actually a legal tag, right?
Yeah.
So Jim Ross is like, I think they're playing by their own rules here. Like, he's trying to say like how stupid this is, right? The Babyfaces do a triple dive out. And did you see what happened here? They did a triple dive out. They were caught by the United Empire team. And then they did like this, the old super collider, three-way powerbomb into Trent. Literally on the floor. I had to rewind this. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Will Ospreay is literally just holding Trent's wrist, and he's like paralyzed. Cannot move out of the way. Can't stop Ospreay. He just sits there and gets crushed with this freaking double powerbomb thing.
Nerve
so
hold. He had him in a nerve hold.
Yeah, he had that nerve hold, I guess. And then like they go to break. They come back from the break, and Orange Cassidy gets the little knuckle lock. He's going to jump. He's going to go the ropes to that big arm drag right off the ropes, the big springboard arm drag. With Mark Davis. But then he runs towards Kyle Fletcher, and Kyle Fletcher's going to miss a clothesline, and then he's going to jump up the top rope, do his little lucha orange drag, right? But Orange Cassidy is already ducked over and running before Kyle Fletcher throws a clothesline. So Kyle Fletcher has to throw a clothesline because that's the spot that they have planned, right? Makes him look like a goof. I couldn't believe this match. I was like about ready to freaking turn it off or fast forward. And then Ospreay gets into Orange Cassidy. Now, Will Ospreay is pulling an HBK versus Hulk Hogan with his selling. And I hope he is, because that's how he should be. Either he should either eat this kid up, eat OC up on his own. Just who cares? Eat him up, because Will Ospreay is a top star in Japan, and Orange Cassidy is just a mid-card, fun-loving babyface, right? Mm-hmm. He needs to be dominant in this match. But if they really want to have a competitive match, if I'm Orange Cassidy, I'm bumping around like he is in this match. Just be totally over the top with it, because he's going to come out looking bad if he tries to have a serious match with freaking this guy, right? So, and
have they ever had a match before?
I don't even know. But, they did. They probably did back then, but that doesn't matter now. It matters where they're at now. Like, Ospreay's been looking really good. I like this Ospreay. I like this heel Ospreay. And I can get into this Ospreay. The one before just kind of flipped around and blah, blah, blah. I like what he's doing now. And I hope he keeps it up. And then that's what I would do. I would just either eat him up or I would just, pull the old HBK with Hogan thing, just bump like it. Like just come on. He's sitting there with his arms out, knocked out.
He was like the paralyzed arms.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in an MMA fight.
Yeah.
Okay, so, these quick cut to the back interviews, I'm starting to get tired of them. And it's not because I think they're bad necessarily. I just think they're shoehorned in. So the Moxley one actually was building towards something, and it was actually good. Mm-hmm. But they did another one, and it was Jay Lethal and Sanjay Dutt. Satnam Singh was behind them, and Sanjay was excited. Lethal was you know excited to be the ROH TV champion again, but Samoa Joe's not here, and Samoa Joe should fight or vacate. Now, we have a pay-per-view coming up. Neither of these guys are on the pay-per-view,
mm-hmm.
as far as we know. I don't think that there's anything going on with either of these guys on Rampage. We don't know anything about Samoa Joe because they're not honest with any of these injuries. And I know some people are like, oh, yeah, you know, it's the talent. And, you know, if the talent wants to let the... You know, how about the fans? How about you are building stuff for fans like this Bryan Danielson thing where we're getting us excited for this Zack Sabre Jr. match and then not telling us that Bryan Danielson is actually hurt. So this match may not happen. So that's kind of my frustration. So, but this built, this was a 20 second thing that was unnecessary on this TV show because it had nothing to do with anything.
It and shouldn't it,
could,
have been on-
it could have been on any show that they've done, mm-hmm. you know, in the future. Do it in 2 weeks when we know if Joe's going to wrestle or not.
Exactly. I had that same note. Like, just why couldn't this be waited? Used on the next week, next Dynamite, right? After the pay-per-view's over and you're done. And like, just the opening line is just a joke. I mean, Jay Lethal was good. His promo was good. He's such a good talker. Why are we wasting? Why is he sitting there? He's got this really good promo. And he's talking about a belt that at this time means nothing. The ROH TV title. This guy should be doing a lot more than what he's doing. And then Sanjay Joe opens it with some goofy line like, I'm so happy I just ordered more pencils. So right away, you're just like, this is stupid. Yep. You know, I can't take these guys serious. But yeah, you're right. 100% right. It should have been not on this show, not on Rampage on Friday, but it's okay for next Wednesday.
All right. So this is the thing that I had the most response to as I was watching it on this entire show.
Mm-hmm.
Christian gives his reasoning for finally turning on Jungle Boy. He immediately heels on Shivani, so gets the crowd up in arms already because they're picking on poor Tony Schiavone. He's picking on poor Tony Schiavone.
Mm-hmm.
He does the WWE thing, and specifically something that Edge had just done in his heel turn, which is start to heel on the fans and blame the fans for why he's upset. He was upset also that the Jungle Boy eliminated him from the Casino Battle Royal. I could not remember which one this was.
I'm trying to figure out too. And like, if it happened, was it even focused on? You know, like, was it ever brought up during commentary? I don't even know if it was or not.
I'm sure. There are AEW fans who are like, I remember exactly that match. I remember exactly this moment. I've had it in the back of my mind. And great. I'm going to guess that is the minority rather than the majority. I think the majority are probably like, I kind of remember that happening, but I don't exactly remember. And I don't know, but it'd be great if they played a replay or something, mm-hmm. you know, so that it would remind us.
How about this, Garrett? A replay of actually the attack that happened last week. It's just Christian coming out and they're explaining it, but maybe someone missed that show.
Well,
you know, that's watching now.
The thing that they did show was him mouthing off with Jack's mom. So he thinks he deserves better. I guess Jungle Boy beating him cost him some money. I guess we are to think still that wrestlers get paid weekly and whether they win or lose and not by salary.
We should, right?
Should I mean, though?
I think so. Like it, or at least these should have worded it of cost him more money as the champion because he would have got the title shot and he would have won the title.
I guess that makes a little bit more. I just think. Yeah. I mean,
that's what he was trying to say, actually.
With this day and age, with the fans and how we understand how things work, sometimes I think the fan base is okay with like, oh, okay, like we can still sort of try and pretend this is kayfabe. But I don't know. I think with this audience, it just kind of makes me cringe when they, in the same promo, Christian is telling us that he's not putting any of the young wrestlers over.
Elevate
the young talent.
Yeah.
And then in the same promo trying to tell us that he gets paid by winning or losing in bonuses. So pick your lane. Like, either we're going as kayfabe as possible, or we're catering to the folks who know enough about this stuff. But I don't think you can try and bounce back and forth, because I think it just is way too corny. And I think people kind of roll their eyes a little bit and they'll go, okay, you know, I guess we're supposed to think that that's how it works, even though we know that it doesn't.
He could have said, when I signed with this company, all they kept saying, like, oh, it's so great to have a veteran like you on the roster, and how I'm gonna help this young roster and these talents here. Like, I'm not here to help nobody. I'm here to help one person, and that's Christian Cage, right? Like, he could have said that way. Not like, yeah, I'm not gonna, you know, elevate other people. You know, I guess he could have said that way. I don't know. Maybe that's what he was trying to do, but he was losing a lot of focus, and
because this was long, that's why.
Yeah, it was all over the place. I mean, he was very passionate, you know, like, and but it then it took a dark turn, which I'm sure you're going to talk about next.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So he says that the one time that he doesn't give Jungle Boy pre-match advice, that's when Jungle Boy loses the tag team titles. Then Shivani, there was also a part where Christian's like talking about Twitter and, and social media.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was probably where you were saying that it kind of went off the rails a little bit. And he said, then Tony said, look, you know, we have this footage of after the match. And so they play the footage, and it is Christian yelling at Jungle Boy's mom, "You've raised a piece of shit," while she is flipping him off.
Smiling.
And then he said that he was giving Jungle Boy's mom a chance to apologize for giving birth to Jungle Boy. He thinks she was a little sweet on him. And then he says, Jungle Boy, you may want a father figure, but your father's dead. And then he told Jungle Boy to enjoy his early retirement at 25. Luchasaurus comes out to interfere. He starts choking Christian, but Christian demands that they talk, and he says, remember what happened to Marco. You're like a son to me. And Luchasaurus stopped, and Christian went in for a hug, and this was like Paul Bearer and Kane all over again.
Yeah.
The mastermind.
Tony Khan must be listening to the Raw 1998 review on Fight Game Media Patreon Plus.
Okay, so I was really heated when I saw this.
Yeah.
And I was heated for two reasons. One, because they went to that WWE trope of like blaming the fans and doing all that stuff. And I knew that people were not going to give AEW as much crap for that, or Christian as much crap for that, because they just like this show better than they like Raw. And Raw, they've seen everything 100 times over. Mm-hmm. Edge just did it. That frustrated me. I was like, come on, dude. Like, unless you are trying to cut a WWE promo, unless you are trying to be the Jericho Appreciation Society of, you know, sports entertainment, you knew this was not necessarily the thing to do. Unless it's just kind of how wrestling works now and the fans react to it. Maybe that's what it was, and maybe it worked for that live crowd. But to me, I was like, okay, this is very lazy. The second thing, now, I'm going to harken back to MJF against Brian Pillman Jr. You remember when MJF was doing everything humanly possible to get the most heat in, I think it was that show. Was that show
Cincinnati, right?
Was it in Cincinnati? I don't remember if it was or not. But basically, he was healing on Brian Pillman's family. He was making fun of Brian Pillman's mom. And guess what? Brian Pillman's mom died. So all of that if you look back on it, it's like, okay, it's in very bad taste to make fun of somebody like that who was not in good health. And then she passed away. And I look back on that and go, that whole thing that MJF did was unnecessary because Brian Pillman Jr. didn't get over from it in any way. And, you know, MJF, it wasn't necessary for him. He's already over like crazy. So now we're using it here. You have, I think you have one opportunity to do this, knowing how close Jungle Boy and his dad were, including the wrestling piece, right? Like the wrestling piece was such a thing for the two of them. If you're going to do this, do it on the night that Jungle Boy is about, or the program in which he's going to win the world title. Don't do it when you're doing a mid-card feud between Christian, who almost everybody really forgot about, is still a wrestler, and Jungle Boy, who has been on this treadmill for a year now. He has not leveled up from anything that they've done. I still root for him. I still enjoy him. I still want to see him do well. This is not the program to do this bad taste stuff just for cheap heat. It's unnecessary. Unless it's going to actually build to something. Unless it's going to actually mean something. Somebody said, it was our buddy Jeremy. He was like, he's trying to get under Jungle Boy's skin. I was like, the one man concerto shot to the head was enough to get under Jungle Boy's skin, yeah. Right? Like, that's where the vengeance is, not because now he's making fun of this guy's mom and dad. Like, that is so juvenile. It is so low class, even for wrestling. It's just not necessary in today's day and age. AEW is the company that promotes equality. It is the company that creates an experience, for folks who really have trouble with a lot of the lights and stuff, you know, going to shows. And now it's the same company who's making fun of people's dead parents. And one more thing, and I'll let you go on, is I know there's a segment of people who go, well, if his mom was okay with it, I'm sure she was okay with it. Does that make it the right thing to do for this angle? Like, we're not asking for permission here. We're trying to build something that is a good program. I just thought this was the wrong way to go.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with everything you say. When they did this stuff with, you know, Luke Barry's passing, I thought they should have. If they're ever going to do this, use it for when Jungle Boy's in a pay-per-view main event position, going for the championship against a really nasty heel champion, you know, stuff like that. Like
against MJF.
MJF, yeah, exactly. That's the only guy that probably can pull that off. But this was, I mean, honestly, I'm going to say it right here. And it hurts me to say this because I love Jungle Boy. He is going to get these matches with Christian. He'll get better as an in-ring performer. But he won't get over. He'll be in the same spot when the program's over because the booking's not going to be focused on it as much. What could they do? Probably going to be some stupid ladder match to kind of end it or something stupid like that. I thought this was unnecessary. I think this whole like elimination from a battle royal that happened and we don't can't even pinpoint when it was because it wasn't even focused on. It meant nothing when it happened. Like they could have got so creative with this. And I was just thinking about this today. Like what could they have done? Like what, cause they were the tag team champions, obviously the Jurassic Express, the tag team champions. What if Luchasaurus gets hurt? Not literal injury, but like, you know, a kayfabe injury, he gets hurt and he's out of action by a heel team, right? Took him out. Now, usually when one team's hurt on a championship team, the titles become vacant, they be held up. But because these heels are the one that put Luchasaurus out of action, AEW could say they are not going to strip Jurassic Express of the tag team titles. They're going to allow Jungle Boy to pick a partner. And of course, that partner that Jungle Boy would pick is the guy that's been mentoring them, Christian Cage. Now you give them a good 4-month at the minimum run as tag team champions, let him have really good matches. But the fans thinking, wow, Christian Cage and Jungle Boy are just so great as a team. What a hell of a team, the veteran and the sensational youngster. And then when it's time for Luchasaurus comes back and there's a big championship match, Jungle Boy makes the call. You know, I got to go with Luchasaurus. He's back. You know, we won these together. It's just the right thing to do, right? And Christian be like, well, I stepped in and we've been great. We've been doing all this stuff. We've been defending. We've been a hell of a tag team. He's like, I know, but I'm also have a hell of a tag team partner, Luchasaurus, who won these belts. I have to stick with them. And then Christian crosses in the titles, right? Turns on Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, right? And then there's a good reason for a feud, not just some random elimination in the battle royal that no one remembers, right? I don't know if that's a good angle or not. I just was thinking about it today. Like, I don't know. It just seems more interesting than what they're gonna do. Because like, I didn't know his promo was gonna be tonight, you know, this afternoon. But I was thinking like, what's his motivation? That he did it after the match is over, after he lost the belts, and it just didn't really work for me at all. Then it got just ridiculous and stupid.
Yeah, what I was hoping, at least closer to what this scenario is going to be with him, was, you know, Christian, his whole thing was outwork everyone, right? I work the hardest. I'm the first guy in and the last guy to leave. And he sees so much potential in Jungle Boy. He himself was a very young man in the business when all kinds of craziness was happening. Him and Edge, Lita, the Hardys, the Dudleys, you know, could talk about maybe them having, you know, a little bit of a longer run if they would have worked a little harder, been in the gym more rather than at the bars and stuff. And so he sees this in Jungle Boy and thinks Jungle Boy could be one of the top guys in the game. But Jungle Boy's young and, you know, we know that he's dating Anna Jay, and you know he's too much into the fandom of wrestling, and you know he's got a partner who he cares about so much, but is maybe holding him back, and that's the reason why he's frustrated with him, because he outworks everyone, and now he's got a new shirt that says "Worked Everyone." That is his new shirt. So something more along the lines of that, at least to me, that makes a little bit more logical sense in the sort of mentor and Padawan kind of scenario. Is like, sometimes the mentor just wants it more than the person he is mentoring, and that is frustration. That's like a real life scenario. Not the stupid bonus thing and and he's doing his research on the Jungle Boy on Twitter. Like, that stuff didn't even make any sense. He didn't even explain that well. Yeah. So,
you know what I'm worried about? Is that going so heavy with his dad's passing and using that, Jungle Boy has to respond with a promo. And
yeah,
I think you're setting this kid up to fail, because it better be fucking pre-taped. That's all I got to say, you know. But yeah, I just, you know, poor Jack, God, his facial expressions leading up to this turn.
Yeah.
Were rough. Pretty bad.
All right, I know we spent a lot of time on that.
Well, because it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I had to get my feedback. I know people were sending me going like, oh my gosh, he talked about Luke Perry. That's your guy.
I was I had a vision in my mind when you said that you just took the belt off and wrapped it around your fist, and you got the buckle ready. You're about ready to punch someone.
Yeah, there was some of that. Like, how dare you, Christian? But it was mostly the other stuff that frustrated me. Okay, back to this show. The Young Bucks and Kyle O'Reilly backstage. The Bucks are champions again. They put out a graphic today that was like a movie poster that just said 2X on it, because they're two-time champions. Matt said that they are going to be on Forbidden Door. Kyle O'Reilly is mad at Sting. Hikuleo and El Fantasmo are going to team with the Bucks against Sting and his cronies, Sting and Darby, and people that they did not mention. I see, this is something where I would have been fine with them spending a little bit more time on this. especially when it comes to these partners, maybe introducing a Hikaleo or an El Fantasmo, maybe doing an actual segment with all of these teams so you can actually see the guys who are going to be in this match who you may not know. But they did it in the backstage kind of way. It just made, like, the Young Bucks are one of their top acts. It just made it seem sort of thrown together and unimportant.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, and then Kyle was hamming it up. Like, it just felt so fake. That's what it felt, honestly. I just did not even, like, these guys start talking and I just don't care. I don't care what they're saying. The Young Bucks have the belts, but God, the top tag team is FTR. Sorry to kind of segue off of this a little bit, but Rampage coming up. You mentioned Jeff Cobb versus Cash Wheeler.
Yeah.
And, well, the spoiler's already out there because it was Tate. Jeff Cobb beat Cash Wheeler in a singles match with the finish. Torrid Islands right in the middle. Boom. How does anything to build up to their tag team title match at the pay-per-view? Nothing. First of all, once again, FTR is losing, even in a singles match, right?
Yeah, their gimmick is that they're the best tag team out there, but they suck at singles matches because they always lose. Even though they're great, even though the matches are really good, they always lose.
But the last time we saw Jeff Cobb wrestle in AEWs was versus Moxley, right? He lost like in...
Yeah, he was like the heater for Jericho.
Yeah, he was the bounty hunter, basically. And so here's the thing. How about instead of doing this match, I know it's a good match. I know you want to put on a good match, but it does nothing to build to their match at the pay-per-view. This is what you need to do. Put Jeff Cobb and Great O'Con in a match against some, you know, a mid-card babyface team like the Varsity Blondes or something like that. Someone that they could showcase what they can do and get a dominant win to go into the pay-per-view. Like, establish them as a team. They're not even established. They just come out with belts and it's on their shoulders. Big freaking deal. Establish them. Use your time wisely instead of just doing a match. Stop doing matchmaking. It's going to be a good match because they're good workers, but it's bad booking.
All right. So... this next match was the other match I was talking about when I said there were some indie-rific matches that I would have, if this was at my local indie, I would have been like, oh, this is really fun, and because you're not really expecting, it's more spectacle and popping the crowd than it is like something that makes sense. And so it's Malakai Black against Penta. We all know the finish because... we know that the Lucha Brothers cannot be on this pay-per-view. So again, this is like one of those things where, you know, Tony understands that this fan base is very smart. I don't know if I would have had this. I wouldn't have had either Lucha Brother in this tournament, this Atlantic tournament, because the fans are kind of smart. And we all sort of figured out that, oh, there's no way that he could actually win this match because he can't be on the pay-per-view. Even, you know, they were even saying it publicly, you know, Andrade and those guys were saying that they're not going to be on the show. So,
yeah,
I thought that there were moments in this match that were really fun, but I thought the finish was pretty weak. Like, Penta shouldn't lose this match because his back goes out. Malakai Black should win this match because he's just the better guy, and he should win a little bit more impressively than he did. It was one of those kitchen sink matches where they just threw everything out there. So I was entertained because there was cool moves, but I don't know. I didn't like the match for the sort of the reasoning or the story that they're supposed to be telling going into this big match with the four-way. I just thought, I was like, oh, wow, why is Penta beating him up so much? And then... mm-hmm. I thought the best part of the whole thing was Miro's promo, which was awesome. That dude should have been in front of the fans to cut that thing. That thing was awesome.
Yeah, that was a good promo, but it just shows up out of nowhere. You know, like put it on the big screen, guys. Like, stupid. But this match, and I thought this match sucked. This match was like indie-rific. I don't know what's going on with Aleister Black. Like Aleister, but I think I don't. Is he was just. Edited better in WWE or something like is this like itchy just there's a lot of nonsense this match that like first of all the dive out that Pentagon does looks really good. It looks like a really good dive out. He hit it, comes up selling his back, And then he rolls Aleister Black into the ring, and then Penta follows him, and then Aleister just double legs him. Dude, you just took a dive out, right? And then in picture in picture, because at the time I couldn't fast forward because I was, you know, watching it live.
You caught up. You were live.
Yeah. And then in picture in picture, Penta gives Aleister the the Owen Hart belly suplex off the ropes, you know, he used to do. But he does it like to Aleister into the corner. And so Aleister takes a bump into the turnbuckles, right? Boom, in his back. Then Penta charges him. Aleister gets the boot up. Then he runs the ropes, tries to do a moonsault. Like, all of a sudden he's fine, can do a moonsault. He just got suplexed into the damn turnbuckles, dude. Like, what the hell? Oh, I hate this match so much. It just sucked. And then it's just horrible. And then, of course, they could have told a cool story where actually Aleister did something to cause the back injury to Penta, and Aleister worked on the back the whole match and was focused on the match the whole match. And then finally, when Penta got his guys come back, he hit that package pile driver. Then the back went out on him. Like, oh, shit. Like, he can't make the cover. And then as they're getting back up, you know, like, there's one more Hail Mary from Penta, but he can't do it. Misses, and they'll kick 1, 2, 3 or something. Like, I don't know, man. This match sucked. That was just horrible. I know people that the audience liked it, but they're just watching moves. There's no story being told here. It's just
And you know, there is a segment of pro wrestling fan base who is, a lot of it is about the moves for them, and it's like, oh, you know, well, maybe this doesn't look great, but
it's a video game mentality.
This thing was very impressive looking, so thus I liked it. And you know, that's kind of what Lucha Libre, in a sense, at least the stuff that I've seen, that is more the focus than it is, you know, like this great story. It's like, oh, like these guys can, like, because there were lots of clips of the AAA, the Triple Mania show, and I was like, wow, like there's some ridiculous stuff these guys are doing. But I only saw it in clips. I didn't watch the match. I don't know if the match was good or not, but I was like, wow, that's impressive stuff.
But I'm telling you, if Aleister was working on that back and people were feeling sympathy for the, you know, Penta's back injury and wanted to make that comeback, it would have been a much louder reaction when we made that comeback if they did it right, but they probably can't. So,
all right, we got a Wardlow video package that was a whole lot of nothing. And this guy may very well still get over and be a giant star. But this is going to be like Bryan Danielson as Daniel Bryan getting over because WWE just constantly beat him and beat him and beat him. And WWE going like, see, that's why he got over. It's like, no, that's not why he got over. He's just really good. He was able to get over, without your terrible creative. That, like, at some, if Wardlow gets over, I wonder if we're going to hear from people going like, see, all you people who said, you know, that he wasn't pushed correctly after he beat MJF, look at what they did. It's like, gonna be like, no, like he's getting over not because of the what they're not doing with him. Like, man, how's this guy not on the next pay-per-view? Like, comes out of Double or Nothing killing MJF, and just the follow-up has been so poor. I don't understand it.
Because he doesn't have MJF, you know, plugging up the holes that Tony Khan has. That's CM Punk is not there. His stuff's good because he's plugging the holes. He's a details guy. MJF's a details guy. Tony Khan's not a details guy. And when he doesn't have someone like that in a program who can, you know, fill those holes, this is what you get. And I don't think Wardlow's going to get to where we think he's going to get, or we believe he should get. I mean, at least unless he's working with someone that's going to, you know, an MJF type, who else do they have on that can get him there, you know, on that roster? Maybe Danielson.
Adam Cole. I think
Adam Cole versus Mike Wardlow. That's going to be, I mean, Adam Cole in NXT maybe, but this Adam Cole, I just don't believe him at all because he's losing so much. He's probably going to lose the pay-per-view again. He's going to be this new Lance Archer.
All right, Adam Page against Silas Young.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting interesting person to come on to this show.
Of all the people they have on the roster, is stuck on Dark. Can't can't throw him on Hangman Adam Page on the versus Hangman Adam Page on Dynamite. Because not like Silas Young's gonna be like, oh shit, Silas Young, we gotta tune in.
Yeah,
you know, I like good talent, but
they have the Butcher. Kind of looks like Silas Young.
They could have Ethan Page out there, just or you know, actually, it's just whatever. Go ahead, talk about it.
Adam Cole on commentary. I thought this was a solid match. You know, hard hitting. Cole wins with the buckshot. There was a moment where Silas Young screwed up a move that I'm sure he does often, where he did the
fireman's carry, forward roll, the fit Finley used to do it all the time. He basically just DDT'd himself.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
And it looked unfortunate for him in the match.
Yeah.
Time stood still at this moment.
He recovered, though. God, yeah, I mean, yeah. Shit. Tough as nails.
But Paige wins with the buckshot, and Adam Cole, he goes, you know, it's time for story time with Adam Cole, baby, and he's about to talk, and Jay White's music plays. He's interrupted by Jay White. Jay White says that unfortunately for Adam Cole, he is not going to get the title shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes in the ring and tells Hangman basically the same thing. They start fighting. Hangman is about to give Jay White the buckshot. As he goes to the outside, he gets low blowed by Cole. And then they start double teaming him. Cole is grabbed the belt. Jay White's belt, and you're not sure if he's going to hit Hangman or Jay White because he's kind of waiting. He's waiting and he's waiting. Jay White turns around. He looks at Adam Cole and he's like, kind of gets, you know, surprised. And Adam Cole's like, no, 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 hold him up, hold him up. And at this point, the greatest wrestler in the world today comes out, and I got excited, and then I got disappointed because I was like, wait. There's still like 45 minutes left on this show. Okada's coming out in the and they still have like 3 segments left. What's going on? Shouldn't he be the last guy to come out on this show?
I don't know. I mean, you really got to have a focus on the AEW title. I mean, you know, if Okada's gonna be there for future
business. He could have showed up in that scrum at the end too.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
That could have been the whole payoff, because this was the question, right? Was what's the title match? Is it's going to be Jay White? Then is it a 3-way? And then now Okada makes it a 4-way. Like, I think that's the most intriguing thing to come out of this show, is that Okada's actually going to be on it. Now I get what you're saying, because and I have my thoughts on how that main event worked, but
yeah,
I just want Okada to be bigger than life and a giant star rather than someone who gets, oh, we got to cut to commercial. Kazuchika Okada.
Well, I mean, if you want him to at least look like a star, could you not have him come out? And can you someone say, like, Okada, could you not come out looking like you work at the Sunglass Hut in the mall? Like, he didn't look like anything special. Just a white shirt, black pants, white shoes. Like, what was that?
I know.
Like, 4 days. Shit.
JR put him over really big as he came out. And again, I got excited, but then I thought, this is not as important as it should have been.
No.
And then I still didn't understand what the hell the match was after this whole segment ended. I didn't know if it meant tag team. I didn't know if it meant four-way. They didn't explain it. They explained it after.
Oh yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But the whole segment was built around what is the match, and when Okada came out, we still didn't really know what the match was.
We didn't know what the hell was going on.
So yeah,
and quickly back to the match: Hangman Page versus Silas Young. Like, we don't need Hangman having a competitive match with Silas Young here. Like, Hangman's going for the title, or going to be in a big match, or we know he's doing something at the pay per view, right? It should have been a more dominant win. Yeah, they could have cut this. They could have cut this down. They could have had this one segment so we can get some more time to the main event where we can actually tell a nice story and build to the hot tags and stuff. Instead of trying to cram stuff in and realize they had 3 minutes left. You know, it's Oh my God, this show was just so bad.
All right, so we get Jade and Kira and Malcolm. What did they say about Red Velvet?
Something she's hurt. Red Velvet? Now she's probably going to come back as a babyface because they're going to get a new baddie. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jade said cut the shit again to Tony Schiavone. I wish Jade would just cut the shit and just do something different.
Yeah, so they're looking on Twitter, which Christian just said was a cesspool. They're looking on Twitter to find their new baddie, and you had to, I think there's a hashtag, I think there's a baddie hashtag, and you had to send photos, but they had to be PG-13 or whatever he said. So
yeah.
I guess they're gonna get some photos, and maybe they'll show them. And so after that segment, Chris Statlander and Athena were trying to be funny, talking about the baddie situation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was another one of those moments on this show where I was like, we have so many important things to do. This yep. one also could have been X'd out and did nothing for anybody. I thought maybe they're trying to get Chris Statlander away from the alien stuff and show her more as a regular person, but this is not the way to do it, I don't think.
Is there not a tag match coming up on Rampage? Is there a match with her or something? Statlander and someone maybe?
Good question.
Kier Hogan maybe?
we'll get to the lineup part of the notes.
Oh, okay.
where Micro Machines Micro Machines Excalibur actually screwed up for the first time because it was a great run of
yeah.
him doing these things so fast and he finally messed up. All right. Tony Storm against Marina Shafir. Nyla Rose came out with Marina Shafir. They have the opportunity, I think, to have better matches than they do sometimes because of the matchups that they want. It's pretty clear that, you know, Marina is still very early in her wrestling career. So if you're trying to build to Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa, we saw what happened with Thunder Rosa and Shafir, and they decided to go back to the Shafir well, and she and Toni Storm had a forgettable match. nothing special about it at all. I just...
There was something special about it.
Which was?
How to not get a contender over for a title coming up on a pay-per-view by having her getting beat up and dominated by someone we already seen get beat by the champion already, and then have her eke out a victory to win it.
Yeah,
and then have
her get her butt kicked.
Didn't have her get her butt kicked at the end, and then have the babyface, the champion, come out and save her. It's just fucking crap. It was a better match than Marina. Marina was and Tony was a better match all in all than Thunder Rosa and Marina Shafir. So I'm on the sandbagging side of the Thunder Rosa. You sure hell did. But like, this did nothing to get Tony Storm over at all. Nothing. And Nyla Rose is all of a sudden just with her, with Marina now. She comes out. And you see that senton she gave for Tony Storm on the floor?
Yes.
She fucking stiffed the hell out of her. Yeah, you don't want to take the bump on the cement, right? So you're not going to protect. Not going to protect yourself. Your opponent. You're protecting yourself.
Yeah.
Before Tony Storm has a pay per view on the coming up, you don't want to hurt her. How about this? How about don't do a senton to the floor if you don't want to get yourself hurt? Just do something else. My God, it's just freaking stupid. This Marina should definitely look better in this match. She looks good on offense for the most part. Still very, 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 very green when it comes to selling and stuff like that. But come on, man. At the end of this match, you really – was there anyone that believed, like, God, Toni Storm's going to win this? This is like – they're trying to not get her over? Mission accomplished, Tony. Good job. Good job, man. They're not getting Toni Storm over. Poor Toni Storm.
All right. Darby Allin and Sting do their interview, and this is one of those moments again where I'm like – maybe have something written out for Darby because I think he has an idea of what he wants to say and he just doesn't deliver it, or maybe he forgets, but there were a couple of moments where this wasn't a clean promo. The Bucks, Hikuleo, mm-hmm. and El Fantasmo. They already mentioned, they, you know, they mentioned earlier in the show that's their tag team. So Darby and Sting came up with were Dudes with Attitudes. Is that what Sting called it?
Did he?
I think he called it Dudes with Attitudes.
I was just impressed that, you know, Darby Allin turned his promo up from a 1 to a 3.
Yeah, this was almost like that Jeff Hardy promo when Matt Hardy was going to an 11, and then it was Jeff's turn to talk, and he was like,
"Cool,
yeah, it's a good match. Gonna have a good match." So it's the team. This team is actually pretty fantastic, though. Darby, Sting, Hiromu, and Shingo. Holy crap! What a team. So this match, it's probably going to be a crazy, crazy spot fest, but you know, there should be some fantastic stuff. My problem with this whole thing was I was taking notes, and I was like, okay, I got the Bucks team, and then so they started naming their team, and I was like writing it down, and then I was like, okay, you know, I'm not sure if I got all of it, and then immediately, boom. Then it went to Micro Machines Excalibur. And I was like, wait. What's the match again? I wasn't 100% sure. But they were going to explain to me what the match was anyways. But I just thought, you know, let me hang with that promo a little bit longer than boom. You know, let's get all the Rampage lineup. Okay. Rampage has Hook and the OKC.
DKC.
Or the DKC. I did that last time. Andrade against Rey Fénix, Serena Deeb, and Mercedes Martinez in action.
Oh, that's what the match is, women's matches. So just a random tag match between these two, with these two.
And Jeff Cobb and Cash Wheeler. All right, so then he does the Forbidden Door lineup. We'll go over that in a second. And then they previewed for next week's Dynamite, Blood and Guts, which I wonder if they're going to do something at the pay-per-view. I would imagine that there's going to be something at the pay-per-view that leads to Blood and Guts, because they've done some stuff, but they haven't hit that home run for Blood and Guts yet, I don't think. So we had the main event, Jon Moxley, Hiroshi Tanahashi against Chris Jericho and Lance Archer. My thought going into this match, and Sammy and Tay were with, Ty Conti were with, the heels. My thought was, okay, Tanahashi has got to look really good in this match, and he's the guy that they sort of have to sell. Everyone knows Moxley's going to be great. That's their guy. He's did a fantastic promo earlier. He's cool. The fans know Moxley. They were trying to get into Tanahashi. They were very much trying to will Tanahashi. Tanahashi wrestled like this was a New Japan eight-man tag kind of style. Like, he didn't really do much.
I mean, he looked hurt. That's what I saw. He looked His hurt. Knees looked really bad.
He looked hurt. He looked slow. Mm-hmm. Him and Jericho got together, and I was like, oof.
Yeah, Jericho too, though. Do you see, like, when Tanahashi is giving those forearms and Jericho's backing up? Like, he just backing up. There's no body language, no registering, just sitting there, just backing up. That's all he was doing. Like, Jericho looked really bad in this match as well.
So there's a moment where Jericho gets the Walls of Jericho. Then there's a code breaker. Moxie breaks up a pin. Tanahashi did his own version of the code breaker, but it was like a one-legged version of the code breaker. Jericho locks in the walls again, and Tanahashi was in this Walls of Jericho for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Moxley was doing something on the outside. That guy was like, okay, when are you going to break this thing up?
I think they said that Archer did something to him, but he just looks like he was trying to, like, he tried to do like a quick little somersault out of the camera, the hard camera shot. But all you do is see like Mox's butt and feet go somersaulting over. Yeah, and then they kind of cut to Sammy who's trying to do something, right? And he kicks Sammy off, and he comes to do this cutter. Lance Archer, the whole, you know, we talk about how bad their camera angles are in AEW and stuff. We could just clearly see Lance Archer just chilling, waiting for his time to pop in the ring.
Yeah.
After the cutter.
So finally, Moxley and Archer in the ring. They start doing clotheslines. Finally, Moxley hits a paradigm shift, tags in Tanahashi, so Tanahashi can hit the high fly flow, and get the pin, and then chaos ensued.
Oh,
Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, they run out. Minoru Suzuki comes out. Shota Aminu runs out. Officials come out. Jericho Appreciation Society comes out. Santana Ortiz come out. And this is when Moxley and Tanahashi gave each other eyes in the ring, looking to the right, looking to the left, going like, oh, we still have time left. Okay, talk trash, talk trash, talk trash. We still got time left. Look him in the eyes, Tanahashi. Like, it was, I felt bad for those guys. They had to do that forever.
Mm-hmm.
It was the longest thing ever. These guys just in the ring. They ignored everything outside the ring because they're so focused on each other. But that thing needed to be like 20 seconds and then show is over. And it was like 2 minutes.
Yeah, something happened with time. Maybe Tony Khan was telling them, hey, tell them they got more time. Tell them they got more time. Stretch it out a little bit. Maybe he was telling them and they just, you know, they went to the finish and that was that. Maybe this whole ending was so crazy because maybe he thought like, oh, we have much time. We got to do something. He sent these guys out. Hopefully that's the case, you know, because if it was the original plan, it was stupid because it just took away from the main event match. I can only imagine Moxley and Tanahashi looking at each other like, this is so stupid. I mean, what they could have done is they had the time. Tony Khan could tell the referee out there and send another referee out there to tell Archer and Jericho, try to get in a ring and you know, have, you know, Mox and Tanahashi, you know, back them off, right? Try do it again. Keep doing it again. I don't know. They could have done, or and Jericho, go in there, take something from Tanahashi. You know, Archer, go in there and take something and bump out and then have the stare off, you know, then you can do that. Like, they should have put a bit better. Like, but what I know, they have Blood and Guts next week, but you have a pay-per-view coming up on Sunday. First and foremost, the main event is Moxley and Tanahashi. That's your biggest match on the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that we both agree on that? Like, focus on that. You just took away from what these guys are. No one cared. Like, at the end of the day, were you caring about the title match? No.
I mean, I care about it because I like those guys a lot. But if I didn't know Tanahashi, I would not have been impressed with what he did in this match. I would have not been impressed with what they've done with him so far. They keep telling me that this guy's a legend, this guy's a legend, this guy's a legend, and I have not seen the legendness yet. They haven't shown us any video packages of how great he is. They haven't told us how many times he's IWGP champion. They haven't told us how many times he's main evented the Tokyo Dome. Like, the stuff that, you know, that JR, I feel like JR, you know, used to do a lot better is with the stats and running down the accolades. Like, this would have been the perfect time to do it for Tanahashi, just like reading through like the list of things that he's done in wrestling. But just how he's been on TV, I wouldn't buy him if I was just a casual AEW fan. I'd be like, why isn't Moxley just going to kill this old guy?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, instead of what they did to build this title match, what if they did more of a boxing 24/7 buildup with training and videos?
Maybe they'll do it in the countdown, because the countdown is going to be after Rampage.
That. I mean, yeah, but I mean, take advantage of your television, your bigger audience, right? Like, what if they did, like, because I think they only had what? After the pay-per-view, they had, what, 4 weeks to this pay-per-view, right? It was like a four-week build. Like, they could have done, like...
You know what the problem was? They had to wait for Dominion.
Yes.
And that was just 2 weeks ago, I think. So they really only had 2 weeks to where they were 100% sure, or at least kayfabe 100% sure that Tanahashi's in this match.
That's right. I forgot about the damn Dominion. Maybe you should have done it without a big pay-per-view that was a month when there wasn't no damn New Japan thing that's going to...
That's what I asked Dave that. I was like, why did they do the show so close?
Could they done it in July?
I forgot what his answer was. He did give me an answer. I literally forgot. But yeah, I was like, you know, why couldn't they have done this in
When's
in
G1 starting?
Oh, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it is was because of G1.
Is G1 starting in July this year?
Yeah, G1 is in July.
I don't know. It's a tough deal, though. It's a tough deal working with New Japan. It is.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I have 100% sympathy for Tony Khan, not because working with New Japan is hard, but I think he's envisioning, I want to give the fans something really cool that they can't get from the other company.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to be a challenge. And like this whole thing, me not loving the build of this show is not me saying Tony Khan did a bad job. There's so many things going on with AEW. See, their champion got hurt. That they're, you know, their MJF other
television.
MJ, well, you know, some of that is their own, you know, angle.
No, I mean, I'm saying like he's there, yeah, because they took him off television.
Yeah, they took him off television.
Not fair. Yeah.
Danielson not being on this show. Like that is something that is out of Tony Khan's control. So this is not a, you know, I'm just going to complain about Tony Khan. That's not what this is at all.
So maybe in some way, it's something a little similar to WWE. I know they have, you know, WWE did, yeah, they had to go back to Brock Lesnar. Danielson gets down. Punk goes down. MJF's not there. Who's there to step up that we're like, oh man, that's okay. I mean, Moxley, sure. But who else?
I mean Jericho, but Jericho's in a six man. But he is somebody you could put in those main event spots and not have to really worry about, you know, whether or not you can trust him in those spots.
Yeah.
Paige,
I think Paige is at that level now. Paige, maybe, yeah. I don't know. It's a tough deal though. I mean, it's tough working in Japan. Like, you know, we have an indie here, you know. West Coast Pro, they brought in Ishii and Nagata. I'm trying to think who else they brought in, and it's like you're paying a lot of money.
Yeah.
And they're going over. You know, like they're not losing. So at the end of the day, like you just spent a lot of money and you're the local talent that you're trying to build around just got beat for the next show. So it's a trade off, right? It's like, well, you're getting attention, but if you're training your audience, like, well, these are actually the bigger stars, right?
Yeah. So. Yep. All right. Let's quickly break down this card. We went a little long on that Dynamite review, but I thought it was worth it because there was stuff. And look, they're building to what we hope is a really good pay-per-view. So, the buy-in match is, like you said, Max Caster in the Gun Club against Uemura, Coughlin. The DKC, I got it right that time, and Kevin Knight in eight man. So Papa Billy Gunn is in this match too.
Yeah, because Anthony Bowens is hurt.
And then we got from, I'll just read this from Wikipedia's from the bottom. Young Bucks, Matt and Nick, and the Bullet Club, El Fantasmo and Hikaleo versus Dudes with Attitude.
It is Dudes with Attitude.
Darby
I was a card-carrying member of Dudes with Attitude. I told you that story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I sent it in the PWI. I had like, oh, fill out this, and you become a member of Dudes with Attitude. I was like, sure, I'm sending that in. I got this. I have it somewhere. I got to find it.
Okay. Who was in Dudes with Attitude? It was Sting. All right,
Sting, JYD, Paul Orndorff, Lex Luger, the Steiner Pillman? Brothers. Pillman, I think, was in there for a while. Maybe even Zank, too. A lot of people, just baby faces.
Yeah.
Of the NWA at the time.
The best. I always was wondering why JYD was a dude with attitude, but
I think it was the super. What was the first name? It wasn't even that. It was like the Super Dudes or something, and it came to Dudes with Attitudes. And then Shawn Michaels and Kevin Nash became the Dudes with Attitudes in WWF, remember?
Yeah, they changed it slightly, though. It was like
Two dudes with attitudes. That's right. Yeah. That must have been Jim Ross still, huh? He's like, you know what? What worked in 1990? That really didn't.
So Darby and Sting and Los Ingobernables de Japón, Shingo Takagi and Hiromu Takahashi. Again, the crazy...
Wait, is Rush supposed to be on the show?
No.
Remember he came out and they did a little deal and they... What happened to that?
I don't know. We haven't seen him since, as far as
he
I know.
Rooched out of there, huh?
Remember. So much crazy talent in this match. I hope they get time, but at the same time, if they do get time, there's going to be lots of crazy stuff going on.
Mm.
Okay, so we have Pac against Miro, against Malakai Black, against Tomohiro Ishii, which, if we didn't have so many multi-man matches, I think this could kind of be a possible show stealer. Mm-hmm. But I think, and maybe it'll be on early, like earlier, so that mm-hmm. because of all of the this is like WrestleMania 2000, where like every match was a tag team match or a multi-person match. There were no singles matches except for, I think it was Terry Runnels and Ivory or somebody like that was the only singles match. This is a multi-man match. There's going to be chaos. There's going to be breaking up pins. And so my worry is that by the time we get to the end of this show, or, you know, one of the maybe the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, they're going to be out of spots that they could do to fool the fans that a pin is not happening. Like, you can only do so much of this stuff.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We're going to be tired of it by the time the main... Well, that's not the main event, right? It's going to be... I think they're opening with this match. What do you think?
With the four-way for the All-Atlantic Championship?
I would think so, because you want to separate these two four-ways, right? And maybe you put the IWGP one in the middle, but then would New Japan want that? Because there before Moxley and Tanahashi, a four-way in itself is designed to be very fast-paced and action-packed at the whole thing, right? So, and then you're trying to have like a long classic championship match. I think Mox is going to go garbage stuff.
I think there will be elements. A small amount of it. I think it may be like he's a little frustrated that he can't put this guy away.
If he pulls out a board with barbed wire, I'm going to lose my shit.
I thought you were going to say if he pulls out the spray can that Kenny Omega had, and then he like used it for deodorant. Remember the match against Jericho? That spot someone, pissed you off so bad.
Someone grab me before I throw something at Dave's big TV and go out buy another one. But I swear, dude. If Tanahashi goes through barbed wire, dude, I'll lose my shit. I'll tell you.
Do you have any thoughts on who should be the first All Atlantic?
Miro is the only one that's over in that group.
I very much agree with you. Les Sex Gods, Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara tag teaming with Minoru Suzuki. What a wacky tag team.
Wacky. But, you know, Minoru Suzuki is a pretty wacky guy himself.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. He should come out in their gear, man. Against Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, and Shota Umino. Kind of a weird mix and match of teams here. I don't even know. I mean, I'm assuming that Team Jericho goes over here, but I don't even know what to think. Like, I don't know who takes the pin. I guess Shota Umino could take the pin.
Jericho. I think Jericho's team needs a win because the Bayface should win the war. The Blood and Guts match.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then we have Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy. I think I told you last week or the week before that I think Ospreay is going to have a lot of fun with this match because I think he likes the challenge of working with a ton of different guys. He probably in some way gets a kick out of Orange Cassidy's shtick just because of the audience reaction. I'm just worried that, I don't know, AEW booking has a much higher opinion of Orange Cassidy than I do, obviously. And if he beats Will Ospreay, I'm going to be so mad.
He can't. He can't.
Well, I guess he can't. The reason why he can't is because the
U.S.
title's on the line.
That he doesn't have because Juice won't give it back to him. Or something.
So is that why he has the Rev Pro belt with him?
Well, the Rev Pro, he's the Rev Pro champ. But
no, I know, but it's like not the Rev Pro title is not.
It's confusing
nothing to do with
people.
These shows. Yeah.
Yeah. Just yeah. You're right.
All right, Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm, like you said, can't imagine Toni Storm winning this for AEW Women's World Championship.
Not the booking we saw this tonight. God.
I'm just praying that they have a good match. There's a lot of, you know, being the only women's match on this show, there's sort of a reaction to Thunder Rosa that is very, you know, there's a big fan base who really wants her to be that next great women's wrestler. But when you have that, the other side is saying, well, she's not that good. So there's this, you know, there's this little tug of war with about Thunder Rosa. I just want her to have a really good match. I want her, Toni Storm, to have a really good match. I want them to stand out on this show because if not, then the story is that, you know, these AEW women aren't as good. And it's just like, I just hope they have a good match so we don't have to hear the narratives about it after.
Well, after all the drama that Thunder Rosa experienced with the match with Marina, I think for sure, I mean, of course, everyone will have a good match. I think she's really going to, there's something for her to prove at the pay-per-view. And Toni Storm's, you know, she's good. So I'm hoping too that they have a really good match. Because I want to see good matches. I don't want to see bad matches, you know? So.
Yeah. All right. FTR, the United Empire, and Roppongi Vice in a three-way winner-take-all for the ROH Tag Team titles and the IWGP Tag Team titles. Like you, I imagine the reason why Roppongi Vice is in this match is to take the fall. Because I don't think it's a better match with the three teams. I think it's a better match with FTR against Okan and Cobb.
Yeah, I guess.
Because that'd be the way to not have the United Empire actually lose the fall, I guess.
Maybe Rocky just wanted to get on the show. So I don't know. He does a lot of work.
Well, I mean, they're a fun tag team.
Yeah.
But not fun enough to be in this match, I don't think.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Desperado's on the show. He come on, Tax.
What, yeah,
wasn't
he is
Jericho
on the
talking
show
about Desperado last week?
Yeah, he came out. He borrowed him, right? Like he borrowed. Yeah. Suzuki's guys.
He was almost Jericho's promos about the 8-man tag, I thought. Well, anyways, I guess we'll see what happens there. Maybe it might be an added match come.
Maybe a second
buy-in match. I believe FTR is winning because we can go through, like, because I think the goal is to have like it pretty even when it comes to
wins.
AEW winners and granted, AEW gets two because. Well, no, they get one because it's Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm are technically AEW. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking of the four-way with the All-Atlantic title, but I forgot Ishii's in there.
Ishii's in the match, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so then we have Zack Sabre Jr. against the newest member of the BCC, which would also make sense with Cesaro.
Hopefully,
I guess he would be Claudio on AEW, right?
Yeah, or Cesaro spelled differently, like Swerve spells it with the backwards E or something.
what Rollins used to call him, Cesaro.
Cesaro. Yeah. So yeah, I'm hoping for Claudio.
Yeah. Good match, but if you are building to Bryan Danielson against Zack Sabre Jr., Zack Sabre Jr. should probably win that match, but then again you have your newest, brand new guy taking a loss.
Yeah. I think that AEW is winning that one. Because I think Brian was going to win it anyway. So.
Okay, so they could. Okay, so then we have Jay White against Kazuchika Okada, against Hangman Page, against Adam Cole. I don't think that they had Okada lose to Jay White so that he could win the title back on the AEW show.
No, hell no. It's going to be, well, because what happened was with Cole teasing that he was going to hit White, and then he's acting like, oh, no, I was trying to hit Okada, pick him up, I wanted to hit him. I think White is going to turn on Cole.
Okay. And then we have Jon Moxley and Hiroshi Tanahashi in the main event. I can't imagine Tanahashi is going to win the AEW title. I'm pretty sure that this is Mox because they are probably building towards Mox against Punk. They have... plus, Tanahashi is going to be in the G1, so he'll be away from TV. This tells me that Mox is winning.
Yeah.
So that's what I would expect.
I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, Tanahashi's not going to be there for, you know, a couple months. So why would you put the belt on him? And yeah, Moxley should win this. I'm just hoping for a really good match. I'm hoping Tanahashi just finds that. I mean, he does, though. When it comes to big matches, though,
I'm sure he was saving it tonight.
Yeah.
Because he's got he just all
like,
out.
looked like he had some bad knees and a bad back to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure he does because, yeah. You know.
All right. Went a little long there, but I think we had to. There was so much passion about Dynamite tonight. Okay, so we will head to Forbidden Door, and next week we will talk about all the things that happened in Forbidden Door, and the wrestling world changes so quickly. News changes so fast that maybe by the next show, like, Forbidden Door is just then and gone, and there's something else crazy that happens that we're going to have to talk about. I hope not, because we'll get a chance to talk about the show a little bit. All right, so for John, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.